Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com. I'm HRN's Communication Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're exploring the future of eating animals, and we're going beyond typical meat sources.
If you look at the length of human history, we've been eating insects a lot longer than we haven't been in the United States and Western Europe.
We're looking at unusual ways to purchase meat.
People are like, really? Why would I want to buy that out of a machine?
And we introduce you to Frank Reese, a poultry farmer whose traditional farming methods are featured in a new documentary.
I'm a fourth generation farmer in Kansas, and I focus basically all on standard bred poultry and have my whole life.
He's kind of the last one standing with these rarefied breeds that are so important for if we're going to eat chicken and turkey into the future. He's essential. He's a national treasure.
Listen to Meat and Three this week to better understand the history and the future of meat. Available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Why Food. Jenny is away this week, so I will be your lone co-host, Ethan Frisch, but I'm joined by an amazing group of people in the studio today, and they're all looking at me nervously, but it's going to go great, and we have nothing to worry about. We're here with a group of people from the Sylvia Center, Raquel Jaquez-Sharp, who's the Community and Partnerships Manager, and then two students, Halima Marega, who's 17, and Isitu Sohona, who is also 17. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Raquel, do you want to kick us off with a little background on the Sylvia Center, what it is you do?
Sure. So the Sylvia Center is a New York-based nonprofit that works with young people to develop their cooking skills and personal development. So we provide teens and young people with classes in community centers throughout New York City where they learn basic knife skills, they learn to work with new flavors and ingredients to enhance their health, their personal health, as well as their development as a young person.
Cool. Isitu and Halima, you're both students who've gone through this program, is that right?
Yes, twice.
Yeah. Did you learn different things the second time?
They taught us more how to, like, with knife skills, like, you have to, like, use the bear claw and the tunnel. They taught us...
the bear claw and the tunnel.
Yeah. They taught us more vegetables, like, in the name of it. We used, like, we used more vegetables, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Than last year.
We also learned, like, mise en place. Like, everything's in place, basically. Like, you got to make sure you know where to put certain things and how to group your food and stuff. Like, not food, but, like, the stuff you're using.
The ingredients.
Yeah, the ingredients, basically. Yeah. So you won't make much of a mess and, like, make sure everything's together.
Yeah. In place. So usually on the podcast, we talk about people who are at some point in the middle or at some point in their careers, adults who have done one thing and then made a decision to change their careers to work in food, have worked in media or worked in music and have become food professionals as a decision later in life. You're both 17, so there's you haven't had careers yet and have not had a lot of experience prior to food, but I think the decisions that you've made are really interesting to work with the Sylvia Center and be involved and maybe even pursue careers in food in the future. So let's start with Raquel, and Raquel can tell us a little bit about her personal history and journey and career into food, and then we'll talk to the two of you and you can tell us about your experiences as well. So Raquel, tell us how did you get into food? How did you decide to do this as a career and what aspects of your personal and professional history have led you to this point?
Yeah, so truth be told, I've always been interested in food. I think I'm a little bit different than your past guests in that way, only because I grew up in Bakersfield, California, which is a very rural part of the state of California in Kern County. So growing up, I could see firsthand the food disparities, whether it was access or education about healthy food firsthand. And I think I took those questions with me to college and because I was in the environment of Berkeley, California, I was exposed to many different kinds of ingredients and people that were working in every layer of the food system.
So how are the food, what did you see as a kid, and how is that different from what you experienced when you left Bakersfield in the way that food was talked about or cooked or eaten?
Sure. I mean, Kern County itself has one of the, it's major in agricultural production. The two main industries there are oil and ag. So a lot of money is in food, as well as there's larger immigrant populations working in the fields, my family included. And so with that, you see this kind of separation between those who are picking and growing the food and those who have access to buy it on the other side of that in the stores. So I think at a young age, I could see that, and I was absorbing that, but I don't think that I understood how to articulate any sort of solution at all to that. And it wasn't until I started working in public education, in schools, and in community centers that I was really able to understand that a great entry point was working with young people to help them articulate what is happening in their food system and the ways in which they can be advocates for healthier communities.
Okay. And Halima, you also had a realization, right, as a younger person, the ways that you used to eat and the ways that you eat now, or the ways that you used to cook and the ways you cook now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like...
That realization? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so like when I was younger, like around my, like when I was in middle school, I used to be around 160, 170 pounds, like in between. So like you imagine like a girl like me, like you imagine like a little person that looking like a little bowling ball, like like walking around. Like I was not too big, but I wasn't like as skinny as I want to be. So like it was hard for me, like especially I was eating everything that I see. Like it was like, oh, I want that, like I want everything that I see. So like it was really hard for me to see like that I'm supposed to eat right, especially at this age, because I'm a grown person. So like it took me until like eighth grade to like look in the mirror and realize like, oh my god, you're really big. Like you're 170 pounds as a 14-year-old. Like, you need to change your eating habits. So, like, that's when I started... I started doing sports. And, I started volleyball. But then that's when I started basketball, that's when it truly helped me, like, losing weight. And I lost, like, about 40 pounds, including cutting my eating habits and starting watching what I eat. Like, I used to eat McDonald's, like, every day around that time. And then
How did you know what to do? How did you know that you needed to eat differently? How did you know what new foods to eat when you came to that realization?
It's like if you see food that you never eat, like, you're like, maybe that's what I was supposed to eat. Because, like, if you know you have a hesitation eating something that you know that's, like, healthy, that's how you know that you know it's good for you, but you're afraid that you might change some type of way because it's something new that you're not used to, especially being around the certain area that I'm in. Like,
which area is that?
Like, I'm around Bronx, so like I live around Mount Eden. But like, so like it was like we barely got supermarkets. I think you could say like one, like two or three. Like now we're getting more supermarkets, but before we only had like one around there. So like it was really hard to like to find healthy food to eat or find something that I know is good for my system and my body at a young age, yeah.
And Isitu, what about you? What was your realization, or have you always eaten healthy? When did you realize that the food that you had been eating as a kid might not have been as healthy as it should have been?
Okay, I always haven't been eating healthy because I used to drink soda like every single day or juice every single day. But then once I entered the Sylvia Center, it's like, oh, maybe the reason why I'm tired is because I drink all this caffeine. So I started drinking water, and then every single day, like, I drink water. So I was like, oh, maybe this is better for me, because after that, like, I had more energy. I wasn't like always tired or like stuffy or full. And a time when I the reason why I started eating healthy was because I'm entering senior year and I want a certain type of body. So, like, as of right now, I am currently trying to eat healthy. Like, I drink water. I don't eat as much of rice as, like, I used to eat before. I cut down on certain type of food. I started eating fruits and vegetables. I started, like, trying new things.
And you both grew up eating a lot of West African foods at home, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about some of the things that you eat with your families. Like, what are your family's specialty dishes? What do you have for dinner on a either on a regular night or on a special occasion?
All right. So, like, I'm from Senegal and Mauritania. So, like, we mostly eat, like, Senegalese food. So, like, what we eat is chep. Like, we call it chepjan, a.k.a., like, jollof rice. It's mixed with, like, yeah, there's, like, vegetables in it, but there's mostly fish or meat.
Tell us about the dish. So, if somebody doesn't know what jollof rice is.
All right. You don't know what jollof rice is,
then you're missing out.
You're really missing out because it's, like, my favorite food. But, like, unfortunately. But, like, it's basically rice that's, like, they use red oil to change the color of the rice. But, like, the red oil also brings, like, the flavor in it. If you search it up on Google, you will see, like, it's, like, rice and then there's, like, fish on it. But there's different vegetables. Like, there's, like, cabbage. There's eggplant.
Potatoes.
Like, there's different stuff in it. Like, it's optional for you. Because you could have only rice and fish, or you could have rice and vegetables. Like, it depends on the person. But, like, what we cook in my house, like, we put everything. So, like, and it takes time to make it, too. But, like, on that, like, we put a lot of seasoning. So, like, it's hard, like, to, like, try to cut down on that. Like, although we don't eat it a lot, but, like, it's, like, you know what we put in it, right? Because we put, like, the cubes, like, of seasoning on it. Like, we put a whole one.
The Maggi cubes?
Yeah, the Maggi cubes. Or we put, like, something called aja. Like, it's, like, the same thing, but it's crushed up and it's in the bag. And then we put, like, sazon from, like, Goya. Like, we put everything in it. So, like, it's, like, like, when you tell your mom, and then you add salt and pepper, like, that makes everything worse. Like, because you're not measuring it. You're putting, like, a little bit more than you need to. And then you're like, mom, I don't think that's a good idea. She's like, get out of here. This is how we eat. You know how we eat. Like, and then you're like, I'm trying to eat healthy. She's like, you're good enough. Like, you look fine, but, like, I know I'm not internally fine. Like, yeah.
Some of the, like, dishes that we cook are peanut butter soup, which has seasoning, jollof rice seasoning, spinach, like a spinach. Yeah, something like that. It's like spinach soup. Not soup, but something like that. It has seasoning. Like, they all have seasoning, like, a lot of seasoning. Like, we eye the seasoning. We don't measure it and just, like, throw into the pot. We have to actually put a lot of seasoning, and if it tastes like it has a lot of seasoning, then we still add a little bit more just for a little chance. But it's like what we do, like, we add, like, a lot of seasoning, and we're not supposed to do that because it causes health problems, stuff like that. So that's why. Yeah.
And how has your family responded when you've made suggestions or tried to change some of those recipes?
They say, I think this is fine. Like, I don't think we need to cut down. Like, something didn't happen yet. But it's like, we're waiting for something to happen when you're like, you should just, like, start from now. Like, just, maybe if I reduce it, I might have, like, a better chance of not having high blood pressure. My mom, like, she has high blood pressure and stuff like that. But we try to cut now, as of right now, we try to cut down on the seasoning, but it's like, maybe a little too late because it's like we're still in the risk of it having it.
Yeah, and then although they be like, I'm scared for my high blood pressure, they think I scream, like, kids is the reason why they have the high blood pressure, but, like,
it's other things too.
Like, it's like, and other things, so, like, but, like, it's like also the way we eat. Like, it's just like we have to control that first. Like, and they be like, nothing's happening to me right now, but we always mm-hmm. say that. So why we wait till, like, as she said, like I said, why would we wait till something happens if we could just not let it happen at all? Because we see other people, like, happening to other people, like, type 2 diabetes or having, like, a certain type of cancer or, like different diseases or disorders. And then, like, I don't want that happening to me when I grow up. I actually want to live life when I'm old. Like, there's people that actually, like, is walking healthy and everything. And, like, they're walking, having fun, being adventurous. I want to be that old person that's having fun. I don't want to sit down and be like, I'm sick. Like, no.
It can be so hard to approach your family about you know, adapting traditional recipes, and there's so much emotional attachment to food that we all have. And so I think something that is really important that the Sylvia Center does is teaching young people about the cooking skills to be able to bring either adaptations or new recipes that you might not think to try. For the two of you, is there anything that, you know, you've cooked at home that might sound a little crazy, but you brought it home and had your family try it?
I'll go first.
Okay. It's not cooking, just whisking. I made the whipped cream with peaches, and it was healthy. It was healthier because I didn't use as much sugar as you will use, and I made the whipped cream from scratch too. So it's like
You whipped the whipped cream by yourself in a bowl.
Yeah,
and it took 20 minutes.
It was a lot of whisk. Like, you take the heavy cream, you whisk it until you see bubbles. But if you over whisk it, then it turns to butter. So you have to like watch with. I had to like watch where you're going. So I made the whipped cream, and then I added a little bit of confetti sugar, and then I just add the fresh peaches, which is like, it's like healthy because it's fresh and fresh. Like, I made everything from scratch except for the peaches, but yeah, I just I just added in the peaches, gave it to my family. Like, the little kids, like, they liked it. They were like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? Is this ice cream? I was like, no, it's whipped cream and peaches. And my parents, they liked it too. So I was like, oh wow, maybe I can make them eat healthy or stuff like that.
Yeah, I also made the whipped cream in my house, and like, I didn't use peaches, but I use like different types of berries, and like, I use like apples, bananas, strawberries, and I think, was it blueberries? It was like different, like I added like 3 or 4 fruits, so like, you know, it was like mostly fruits than the yogurt itself, because I didn't want them to like only eat something like because it tastes sugary. Like, you want them to eat healthy. So like, my brother was like, "Ooh, this is good. Make sure you make a big cup for me." Like, he kept asking for seconds and thirds, and he thought it was more, but then it was like they liked it, and then it was like, all right, now you can make this, but can you still make the authentic food that we make in the house? It's like, that's not the whole point. Like, well,
have you found ways to adapt some of those authentic or traditional family recipes to make them healthier now that you've learned a little bit more about
not healthy yet cooking? Like, it's hard. Like, it's really hard. Like, it's like telling them, it's like as if you're telling them to cut their hair. Like, not everybody's like gonna be willing to cut their hair. Like, the same thing with food. Not everybody's gonna be willing to change their food habits. So like, it's like telling them, you should eat healthy. They're gonna be like, what I look like to you? I'm not like this. Like, it's like, I'm not like that. I'm not like this. I'm like, that's not the point. You need to eat healthy. So like, and I also gave them some of the zucchini muffin. Well, I ate most of it, but yeah, I gave some of them, and then they actually liked it because it didn't taste like a zucchini. It tasted like an actual dessert, but it's not dessert. It's not dessert.
Right? So do you think that the trick is to just be sneaky about eating healthier?
Yeah.
Just like make healthy food taste better.
Yeah, you gotta and make it look like junk food. Like, you just gotta make it look like junk food, and they'll be like, "Ooh, what's that?" And they'll eat it. But it's easier to convince little kids because my nephew likes to eat everything, so it's easier to give him something healthy and him actually liking it rather than my 20-something-year-old sister.
Yeah. What are some of the other recipes that you've made that you learned at the Sylvia Center that you then made for your families or brought home, or just some of the recipes that you've learned at the Sylvia Center in general that really stand out to you?
One that really stand out to me was the breakfast burrito with the berry smoothie. Like, okay, it had like a lot of combinations of it was a protein. Like,
Halima is also nodding her head. She agrees.
Yeah, it was mostly a protein snack. Like, it had beans, it had some red peppers, it had egg and a tortilla, onions, and it tasted really good. It was like surprising because like it's like a combination of vegetables. And it's like, oh, like, should I really eat this? Because it's, like, vegetables. And you have a certain belief of vegetables. Like, oh, maybe it doesn't taste good. Like, broccoli, like, still to this day, I wouldn't really eat it. Because it's just broccoli. Like, I don't find it, like, attracting.
Yeah, I can't eat it like that. I have to eat Chinese food with it. I'm sorry. Like, me and Chinese food, yeah. I'll be like, yeah, I'll eat the broccoli because of the sauce that they put. But, like, other than that, eating broccoli like that, I'll pass.
I tried to, but it's not like
just raw broccoli. Eat it like an apple or something. That's not.
But the breakfast burrito, it was like really interesting because it tasted really good, and I wanted seconds, I wanted thirds, and it was like really satisfying. It makes you full. It's like eating one whole snack. It's like, oh, maybe I should just make this at home. I could just eat one every morning and I'll be full, like I'll be fine. And I have like a good day to start it off with.
Yeah. One thing I liked from cooking with the service sensor is the whole wheat pancakes. That, oh my gosh. Like, yeah. Yeah, like the whole wheat, because I like pancakes already. The waffles is better, but like I like pancakes already. So like, it was like you could actually make whole wheat, like healthy pancakes, like whole wheat pancakes, like so like, and the kids like the itself, especially with jam. Like you could substitute syrup with jam and it actually tastes better than syrup. Like unfortunately for my syrup lovers, like jam is like strawberry jam is better than syrup. Like if you actually eat it, it's like it's not even as if it doesn't even feel like you're eating pancakes. It's like you feel like you're eating like a little, I don't even describe it.
Like a cake brownie-ish.
Yeah, like a little cake, like a cake without frosting. So like it tastes really good. And another thing I liked, I liked a lot of stuff. I'm sorry.
Raquel, what are some of the, or tell us about the recipe development process. How do you come up with whole wheat pancake recipes or zucchini muffins? What are the goals and what's the process to?
Yeah, the goals of the program are really to help the teens develop their cooking skills, both with the knife as well as, you know, sauteing, roasting, the fundamentals there. And we have trained community chefs who are from the neighborhoods and boroughs in which they work. So the idea is that they are getting the recipes locally, whether it's from a large-scale grocery store or the nearest bodega or farmer's market. And they're creating things that are that speak to what our teens like to make, what's delicious, as you heard, but also things that are practical and useful. So if you can make a quick breakfast burrito for yourself before school, that's a lot better than grabbing a donut on the corner or whatever. So each community chef takes that role seriously in order to make the most of the program. And after 8 weeks of training, these two young ladies included will teach younger kids in community centers. So they not only have to master the skills, but they also have to work on their education, you know, sort of educator hat. And how are you going to wrangle 20 young little kids in a kitchen classroom? And how are you going to convince them that the whole wheat pancakes are just as good?
Yeah, and these are kids with knives. Are you are you teaching them knife skills and other potentially dangerous things to do in the kitchen?
But butter knives, though. Not everything is that flexible.
So what were the skills that were the hardest for you to learn? Isitu, you want to start?
Okay, at first, I wasn't really good with my knife skills because like I didn't have to like properly hold the knife and chop, because I just like sometimes when I was like before, I used to take okra and take the knife and just like chop it with my hands instead of just like actually put it on the cutting board and chopping it on the table or cutting it on a cutting board or whatever. But now like I know use the tunnel, use the bear claw when the object is like unstable.
The bear claw is like the way that you hold your hand to keep your fingers from getting cut when you're slicing.
Yeah, if the object doesn't have like a solid base, you take it and you like cut it in half and then it has like a flat base and it's like more stable. Like before I wasn't good at, like I didn't know how to cut right, but now like I know how to do it better, because even though like I still have like a hard time chopping sometimes, but like it helped me better. Like I know more now.
One thing that I learned that I had is the same thing, like cutting skills. Cause like my cutting skills, like I cut everything with my hand, cause that's how I learned in my house in Africa with my sister. She like they used to like when I try to cut at, like now I'm so used to cutting with the cutting board. When I cut with the cutting board, my mom's like, "What you doing? We don't got time for this. Like, use your hand." So like, it's like, oh, but you're so used to a certain skill now. Like you start to know like what to properly do. Cause I and like before when I used to use my hand, at some point I even cut my fingertip off one time. Like I was like, so now that I learned this, I know that I have a less of a chance cutting myself. Like it's a good thing. Yeah, and I think I also learned sauteing, cause I didn't know like when to properly like stop, or like sauteing a certain thing like onion and stuff. But like now I actually do, cause like you know how it's supposed to look like, and you know when it's tender.
And what are you most looking forward to in teaching those skills to younger kids this summer?
I think it's like the overall message of it. Like, if the cooks could come home and like take the message as like, oh, I'm teaching you how to eat healthy. So, like, just teach your family how to eat healthy too. It's a good thing, because last summer in the summertime, one of the kids, he came up to me and he's like, oh, can I get the recipe for this? And I was like, wow, like, you really want to eat healthy at home? And then he took it and then he made it with his family at home. It's like, oh my gosh, like, they made it at home. They like it. So it's like, oh, I could just keep on going on until like every kid is like really healthy.
Yeah, same thing with me and my son. Like, kids was like, can I take this home? Can I take this to my sister? Can I take this? And then like now, ever since teaching them, like, they used to see me every day and they used to hug me and they'd be like, I can't wait for cook shop. I can't wait for this. It's like, wow, you actually like this food. Like, I used to be like, I can't wait for the summer to get over with. Like, I'm just here to just help you out. But, like, I just seen the kids smile and everything. Like, it was like, oh, you actually like eating healthy. So I should do the same, like, with my sisters and stuff.
That's great. All right, we're going to take a quick break with a word from some of our sponsors, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Yeah.
What it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
I'm Souther Teague of Amoria Margo and the co-host of The Speakeasy right here on Heritage Radio Network. You know, my favorite thing to do every week is to come here and be on the show. I have lots of jobs. I am a very busy person. And I do this because I love it. I get to sit down and talk to all my heroes for about an hour every week. It's incredible. And I hope that you enjoy it, making a great effort to share with you. And we'd like you to share back with us. It's our summer fundraiser, and we'd love for you to donate at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. You can click on the beating heart, and you can even choose shows that you'd like to donate to specifically, and you can also choose a recurring monthly gift. And for all that, we'd be greatly appreciative. Thank you so much.
And we're back. You're listening to Why Food, a podcast about entrepreneurs, innovators, and career changers from other industries into food, but today, we're doing things a little bit differently. First of all, Jenny, my co-host, is having fun in France, and so I'm here on my own hosting the show, but I have some really great guests. I also wanted to remind all of our listeners that our summer fund drive is going on now through the end of July, and we're hoping to raise about $25,000. So if you visit our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and donate, you help support our show and other shows like this. So we're here with a group of people from the Sylvia Center. Raquel, do you want to start us off with, or bring us back in, I guess, with a little bit about your career, how after growing up in Bakersfield and going to college at Berkeley, realizing you wanted to work in food, why was the Sylvia Center, why was healthy food education the thing that you wanted to do with your career?
Yeah, I think that, you know, working in a school, working in education as well, or more broadly, as well as like community centers and nonprofits, you really see that people is really where you can make a difference. I think in a city as large as New York, we often are rallying around policies and larger scale things, and it can seem a little bit daunting to tackle all of those issues at once on that level. And for me, I really think that young people especially are because they're our future, because they are the change makers, and like Halima and Issa too were mentioning, they can influence both older folks and younger folks. They have that that balance. And so it's really people that I think can make the difference. And while I believe in advocacy and policy and all of those things, I think that when we invest directly in our communities, it's where we can make the biggest difference.
And have you, Isito and Halima, have you felt like you have this power to influence older people and younger people? How does that translate in your, in the conversations that you're having?
Well, I feel like we have more influence than in younger people than older people.
Yeah.
Like, because...
A little easier to change.
They're easier to change because, like, you'll know it'll have an impact on them in the future because us as minorities, we're the ones that are changing the future. So, like, if you tell them now, it's better to tell them sooner rather than later. Because if you tell them the adult later, they're like, what am I supposed to do already? Like, I don't got time for this. Like, it's, so, like, you know, teens have a lot of time. Kids have a lot of time. So it's like, oh, telling them, it's time for you to change the way you eat. It's time for you to advocate for healthier food in your community. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing sitting down there eating McDonald's? Like, change. So, to sit here, me as a minority, as to tell people, like, to change. Like, I actually like that. Like, that I can actually influence people that are younger than me rather than people that are older than me because they're not the one that's changing the future. I am, and the people around me are.
There are also a whole bunch of people listening to this conversation right now, so maybe there's a potential to change.
Yeah, so guys, if you don't have any supermarkets around you, you better advocate for it. Go to Mayor Bloomberg or something. Ask. Just ask.
I argue for Nima too because I feel like it's easier to change a young child than rather than a teen adult because a young child, like if you tell them, like, oh, like if you try to make it as like a rule, then like it's like standardized. So it's like, oh, like I'd rather take the healthy food than take the unhealthy food. And also for adults, it's like they have like a certain traditional view of it or like a regular rule of it. So it's like, oh, like I learned this all my whole life and you won't tell me now, like just to change. It's like, oh, like why? Like give me a real fact and then I'll change. If not, then it's like, oh, even with the real facts, like it doesn't always help because they know that, oh, if they eat a lot of oil, like they could get a certain type of disease, but they're gonna be like, oh no, like I don't care. Like unless it happens to me, then I will change. But if not, then it's like, oh, I'll still continue going on and on and on.
Yeah, it's like talking to a brick wall. Like it's experience with my parents. Like I'll try to tell them something, but like I think that's all parents in general though. You'll try to tell parents something, but they'd be like, parents are always right. Yeah. Until they realize the child that right for the first time. So, like, telling an adult in general, like, oh, yeah, it's time for you guys to change the way you eat. It's not good, especially getting old as you're getting older. They're going to be like, no, what you talking about? You're too young. Like, you don't know what you're talking about. But, like, I know what I'm talking about because I did the research and I have experience. Yeah. Like, it's good to, like, actually tell the young people than the older.
And this is one of the really challenging dynamics to figure out, right? Like, the conflict between traditional foods, traditional flavor preferences, ingredients, which sometimes are not the most healthy, whether it's palm oil in the jollof rice or other things, versus newer understandings of what it means for food to be healthy, newer flavor preferences, ingredients that you like that your parents might not. So how do each of you have those conversations with your family to say, like, yes, I appreciate and respect the traditional foods, but then I also want to change a little bit about the way that I eat and the way that we eat as a family. How do you navigate that complex situation?
Okay, when I used to work sometimes, like we would have like a lot of extra olive oil and stuff like that. So then I would bring it home, and then I would be like, Ma, oh, like look at this. You could, instead of using corn oil or salad oil for the jollof rice, oh my, just like use the olive oil. So then one day, like, she made the olive oil one and then we ate it, but she's like, it tastes weird, so maybe I could just like stay back to the corn oil. I was like, Ma, just like continue trying on it, like once you adapt to it, it's like, oh, it's like better for you and stuff like that, especially with the seasoning. Like I'll try like to cut back on it, like, oh, just like use a little bit of this and use a little bit of that, because the one that we have Axon has like MSG, which is like bad for you, because I think it activates something in your brain, which is not good for you.
Yeah.
So I'll let my okay, just like cut back on Axon or use a little bit of it, and like, until like we go back to like until we go to zero, like I'll just like use little of this, little of that, little of that, and so on.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, it's a complicated question, yeah. I guess. Like, how do you navigate the conflict between tradition and health in these conversations with your families?
Yeah, so, like, basically, like, I know, like, knowing my family, like, is full of hard-headed people. So, it's going to be hard to tell them, oh, yeah, let's try this, let's try that. Like, I'm like, no. Because especially since we're so used to eating, like, sharing a whole bowl of food. Like, and these are the type of food that you don't share in a bowl. So, like, it's going to be hard for that. And then it's going to be also hard for, like, telling them, yeah, let's eat healthy. So, like, what I usually do, that, like, it's kind of, like, to be petty. But at the same time, it's trying to show them, like, I'm really trying to be eating healthy. And, like, especially, like, doing the Sylvia Center throughout the year, I actually, like, eat. Like, because we did it after school. So, we did it around dinner time. I'm already eating from Sylvia Center. So, like, I'll eat. And then after I get home, my mom's like, come eat. I'm like, oh, I'm full. Like, I already ate. She's like, where you ate at? I'm like, I ate at Sylvia Center. She's like, you in this damn cooking program. You can never eat. Like, excuse my language, by the way. But, like, yeah. She's like, you in this cooking program. You never eat at home. But it's like, I'd rather feel full and feel light and full and healthy rather than eating something that's going to make me feel like, although my eating habits is not where I'm supposed to be at, but, like, I'd rather feel healthy and full and light rather than feeling just full and feel, like, weight on me and going straight to sleep.
And that's another tricky question, right? The definition of healthy food, that's something that changes a lot generation to generation. It has to do with new scientific discoveries. It has to do with pretty subjective understandings of what's good for you and bad for you. When you think of healthy food, what do you think of, or how would you define, Isidore, how would you define healthy food?
Before, when I was young, I thought, oh, like, eating healthy is, like, no salt, no pepper, just, like, all greens. But then as I grew up, I was like, oh, it's just not that. Like, you can eat salad all day long, but if you put the dressing in it, it's, like, it's not healthy because you're putting a lot of dressing in, which has, like, salts, which is, like, salt, sodium, and oils and stuff like that, which is not good for you. Like, too much of it is not good for you. But I define healthy as, like, if you could eat 10 foods and 10 pieces, like, if you eat the 10 foods, it's, like, oh, it's not going to kill you. But if you eat the 10 pieces, it's, like, oh, damn, like, you have a, you might have, like, a risk of having a disease or something like that. And also, I've defined healthy as, like, it has more proteins than sodium, than salt. It has less salt. It has minerals. It has vitamins, like, A, whatever, like, just all vitamins, instead of having, like, oils, a lot of calories and stuff like that.
What I define as healthy food is, like, something that you know that you feel the glow in you, something that makes you feel, like, happy. Because, eating, like, something, like, let's say if you eat, like, I don't know how to describe it. If I eat, like, a zucchini muffin versus the apple pie from McDonald's, like, I think now I actually prefer the zucchini muffin over the apple pie now. Because I actually like the zucchini muffin. So, like, because it makes me feel the glow. It makes me feel happy. So, like, I feel like what's something that, what I define as healthy food is something that makes you feel light on your feet, make you feel happy, make you feel good in yourself. But and as unhealthy food is, like, something that you know it makes you feel, like, full. It just lets you go throughout the day, but you know you'll still feel tired because of all the healthy stuff, unhealthy stuff you bring in your body.
So how do you make those decisions when you're either choosing what to cook or choosing what to eat or picking a recipe, going shopping? How do you decide what's healthy and what's not? And how to balance the flavor benefits that you might get from something that's a little less healthy with the health benefits.
I feel like where the origin of the food is, because if where it comes from, like, okay, if the food's more organic, then it'll say it was organic. So I'd rather pick that than a food that has, like, stuff, it's like stuff with hormones and stuff like that. Like, you know if it's not healthy. And like okay, in the Bronx, it's like price range, you will know which one is healthier than that, because it's, like, more expensive, or, like, it's more has, like, a better quality than other types of food. Like, the fruits, okay, something that's, like, grown locally, I feel like it's healthy too. Like, just anything that's, like, organic or fresh, or, you know, like, it's grown properly, not stuff with hormones and stuff like that.
As she said, like price range, because, like, you'll see, like, a whole Naked juice, like, $4, $5 isn't, and it's a small bottle. Like, and then you see an Arizona for a dollar, or a Nutty, for, not Nutty, but like it's a tropical fantasy soda. We call it Nutty. Like, it's 50 cents. Like, and it's a soda. Like, that's how you know, and it's known for giving kidney stones and stuff like that. So, like, it's like, you know that you're supposed to eat something that's more $5, but why would I get something? It's like, why would I go get something that's like very expensive if I could have something that could just make me full right there?
And like, why do you think that is? How do you explain the huge price difference?
I feel like it's because it's like, we know you're an urban city. You know we're full of people, full of poor people. So like, they know that, we know that you need this, but it needs something dealing with business. Because at the end of the day, everything has to deal with business. So like, I wish sometimes that we have stuff that's affordable around my community, because like, same thing with me. Like, I'm in a place full of people that doesn't have access to a lot of stuff. A lot of homeless people, a lot of everything. So like, it's going to be hard for us to get something that we know is good for our body, but it's affordable. So it's like, nobody got time to spend $30 on something like four vegetables. I'd rather spend $5 on a whole bacon, egg, and cheese and a honey bun and a soda in the store and just go about my day. And me and my sisters always had to wait till like the produce turned into a dollar. They put in a wrap because it's getting spoiled. We have to always wait for that. And then we're like, yeah, it's good enough because it's a dollar now and it's still healthy, but it's not really healthy because it's getting bad already. So like, yeah.
So is there a solution? If you had the power to snap your fingers and solve that problem, how would you solve that problem?
Well, first, I feel like since you said that, like, maybe if I had a superpower just to snap his fingers, making sure that maybe junk food tastes the same, but like junk food's tasting the same, but it's healthy stuff in it, not chemical based or not made in a certain way. So like, it's like, if I snap a finger, and like potatoes, like the way they make french fries, the which will be changed different. Then maybe they could make wedges and with breadcrumbs and stuff, because that one tastes better. Me personally, I feel like that tastes better than regular fries. Well, McDonald's fries are good, but like breadcrumbs, like regular origin fries that you make is better than like food that you just get for just right there.
Yeah.
I feel like if it's more affordable, then people will buy. Because if it's not affordable, then nobody's going to buy. Like, I feel like if you want people to change, like, their eating habits, they have to, like, make it into their price range. Not, like, $5 for a pack of carrots. Like, even in my supermarket, they have carrots for $1.29. It's the dough. I think it's the dough carrots for $1.29. And the other carrots are, like, for $3.29. So when I go to supermarket to buy vegetables, I'd rather buy the $1.29 carrots than buy the whole $3, because it's like, oh, I'm wasting money. Like, just if you make everything like the same price range or something like that, then it's like, oh, I'll pick this because it's more healthy, or I'll pick this because it's more affordable and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about your future, your career aspirations. Do you want to work in food? Do you want to cook professionally, or is this going to continue to be a hobby? Where do you want to be in 5 or 10 years?
I remember when I was younger, I wanted to be a food critic.
Like, excellent.
Like, that's the first thing I wanted to do. Like,
what did you think of the pizza we had for lunch?
Oh, it was really good. especially that, what's the name? The one with the green leaves.
The pea shoot pizza. We had lunch at Roberta's.
Yeah.
Which does a great pea shoot and yogurt, a lavender pizza.
Yeah, it really tastes really good. Really good. Like, it was... I didn't expect that, because I was looking at it for like a few, like 5-10 minutes, like the past 30 minutes when we was talking, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I should try that yet. Like, but then I tried it and I actually liked it. Like, I was surprised. So like, at first I wanted to be a food critic, but then after that I looked in more into technology. But I don't know, like, as a teenager, like, your mind is always changing around, so you never know what, and doing this, I also made me realize technology might not actually be for me. Like, yes, I love technology, but maybe I could work with something dealing with, like, fashion or dealing with food, fashion, and technology. So making a new field. So I'm, like, my head, like, I'm heading towards there. Like, that's what I'm seeing so far.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm still uncertain because, like, as Halima said, when I was younger, I wanted to be a doctor or a dentist, but then when I grew up, I was like, oh, like, do I really want to do that, like, for 8 years just in college? I'm like, I want something that's, like, it's right there and then. And then when I grew up, I started watching Criminal Minds and stuff like that. I was like, oh, maybe I want to be an FBI or I want to be this. But then I looked at, oh, like, what you have to do? I'm like, oh, my gosh, like, this is, like, really too much. So then as of right now, like, the reason why I started in the cooking field was because first it was, like, given to me as a job. And second, it was like, oh, like, I can make a change with this. And it's, like, almost something that, I could make a change in, like, I could say I was the first, like, to do this and stuff like that. Like, I just want to be, like, a change maker.
Yeah, and especially working in Sylvania Centers, like, we ended up having more opportunities. Yeah, like a lot of jobs, a lot of interviews and everything. So, like, it's, like, we already working on our future. So, like I appreciate Sylvania Center for that. Like, I feel like without them, I feel like I wouldn't have done a lot of stuff that, like, I wouldn't have matured. I wouldn't have realized that, like, yeah, it's time for growing up. It's time for you to think about it. Because I would have been still thinking about, yeah, I'm still doing technology, but I don't want to be in a field that I actually don't want to do. So, like, I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah. So we're going to start to wrap up the show. But as before we do, we're going to do our rapid fire question segment. Mm-hmm. Are you ready? I prepped you a little bit, but not a whole lot. So,
yeah, I'm ready.
Let's start with the superpower question. If you woke up tomorrow with a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, it's to fly. It's to fly or to teleport. Cause me, I'm late to everything. Even today, like, I was like, oh, okay. Like, but to fly, to teleport, that would be the best thing ever.
You think if you could fly places, you wouldn't be late?
Yeah, I wouldn't be late. For a fact.
So it's just about the practical benefits of flying. You're not interested in, like, the fun of flying. It's,
yeah, I'll be. Yes, because you could make fun of people, like, and they wouldn't have to catch you because
you could just fly away.
You could just fly away. That's it.
I would like to read minds and to teleport because when I'm walking home,
two superpowers.
No.
When I'm walking home and I have food in my hand, like, I'm rushing to get home, but I know I can't get any faster. I just want to teleport and just get home and eat the food. And then I would like to reimagine because, like, oh, like, I want to know what you're thinking. And it's, like, not to be nosy, but it's just, like, I just want to know what you're thinking. Like, I just want to know.
How would you live your life differently if you knew what people were thinking?
I know, like, if you're beneficial, then, like, I'll stay close to you. But if you're not really beneficial, it's, like, oh, nah, just stay away from you. I know what you're thinking. It's, like, just move on.
Do you need to read minds to be able to do that? People are usually pretty
No,
clear.
You could tell. You could tell.
Read people, yeah.
You could tell.
Raquel, how about you?
I would want to not need sleep.
Mm, yeah, that's a good one.
Just have all the hours in the day to do.
Oh no,
lots
I need
of great
my
things.
Sleep. Sleep is the best part of the day.
Yeah,
I need my sleep.
What is the best meal you've ever eaten?
Oof.
I think it's.
You can't think of a single meal, it could also be like your favorite thing to eat, your favorite dish that. Someone in your family makes.
We went to a trip to, I think, Best Quality... No, it's...
Quality Meats.
Quality Meats. And they gave us some type of bread. And it tasted really, really good. Like, I kept on eating it. And it was, like, it's healthy. But it's, like, it tasted really, really good. And I wanted more. I want the recipe for it.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that recipe.
What, like, was it?
It's, like, a certain bread. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It was, like, in a bowl. And it was, like golden brown. It had, like, fresh herbs on top. And, like... I didn't even want the chicken that they gave us. Like, I just wanted the bread. And every single time I see Samantha, I'm like, oh, by the way, did you ask Chef Antonio if he still has the recipe? Like, that's my first question I always ask her. Like, because, like, the bread was really good. But, like...
Chef Antonio and Chef Craig at Quality Meats hosted some of our teens, and they learned so much about how a restaurant menu is made and all of those things. So,
yeah,
we'll get the recipe.
Yeah, I'm considering making my restaurant that's it. Because they use, like... The best thing about learning that is, like, you could use a low price just to make a high quality meal and, like, make good money. So, like, it's not only about the food. It's, like, the pricing, the business, everything in one. Like, it's, like, that's something I consider. But it's a lot of work, too. So, like.
Yeah, running a restaurant. It's a lot of work. If you could. Raquel, what was your best meal you've ever had?
The best meal. I've had a lot of really good meals.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to choose, right?
Yeah.
I think just one of my favorite meals in general is tag teaming at home with my husband and just cooking curry on, like, a Sunday. That's the best.
What's your approach to cooking curry?
Well, he takes the lead and mixes his own mixture of spices first and sautés that in the ghee and then we add in whatever ingredients we want after that.
Nice. If you could travel to any country in the world, what would it be? Where would you go?
A lot of countries.
A lot of countries.
To my home country, the Gambia, to Paris, to see the Eiffel Tower, to Ireland, to a lot of countries, Greece.
Yeah, I think the first place I felt like I really, really wanted to visit was Greece. Like
Greece? Why are you both interested in Greece?
It's like,
I have a teacher in the 70s, and she talks a lot about Greece, and it's like, oh wow, like it's been interesting.
And I've seen so many videos, like it's like Greece is like a beautiful country. So like it's like I wanted to travel there. Like I know that's the main goal for me. I'm even thinking about it maybe after high school, but like Greece, I know a lot of places in Europe, like Greece, Rome, like France, because my cousins live there. I need to visit them. I wanted to travel to Reunion Island when I first heard about it, because it's not a known island that much, but like it's like if it's not known, then it's perfect for me, because I don't like people anyways that much. So like
Go hide in an island in the middle of the ocean and nobody's gonna find you.
Nobody's gonna find me. That's it.
I would say Japan. I think that's next on my list.
Nice. How do you like your eggs? Scrambled, over easy, runny?
Scrambled with a lot of cheese.
Yeah, with a lot of cheese. Like, if it's not scrambled, it's either sunny side up or scrambled. That's it.
I like a runny poached egg.
Yeah, it's pretty good. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you all for joining me here today.
You're welcome.
Raquel, can you tell us a little bit about how people can learn more about the Sylvia Center, or maybe donate if they feel so inclined?
Yeah, definitely. You can visit our website at sylviacenter.org. We work here in New York City and also upstate in Columbia County. So if you're interested in supporting the work here in New York City, you can learn more on our website. And upstate, we are having a farm dinner at Kachke Farm on July 14th, so you can learn more about that by going to fttdinner.com.
And this is Why Food with Heritage Radio Network.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget to follow the Sylvia Center on Instagram.
Thank you very much.
The Sylvia Center, right?
Yeah. Sylvia Center.
Yeah, Sylvia Center. just make sure you follow.
Thanks. And this is Why Food. You can contact us at whyfood@heritageradionetwork.org or at Why Food on Instagram or social media. My name is Ethan Frisch. You can follow me via my spice company, Burlap and Barrel, at Burlap and Barrel. And thanks to our sound engineers, Vitor Hirsch and David Tadashore, and our theme song, which is Blind by the Red Crickets. Thanks, and join us again next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Well, that's history of mine.